Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Happy New Fear, Fright Schoolers. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Joshua.
Oh, we're back with our first episode of 2021. We survived 2020, but it doesn't matter. As our highly liked Instagram post, which if you're not following us, at Fright School on Instagram, but I posted a picture of Elvira looking shocked. And that's all.
That nothing's changed, that everything's the same.
That everything is the same. All these people that it's like, oh, 2021 is finally here. I'm like, yes, I'm dragging with it all the same bullshit. And a new strain of coronavirus. So fine.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about that. This is not a medical podcast. Joe, how are you? I haven't seen you in so long.
Yes, you have it. I've been good. You know, it's a very chill holiday season. I actually didn't mind it and quite prefer that all holidays be like this from now on.
Right. There was no dishes to clean up, no, you know, big messes. My house stayed looking good. Mm-hmm. I did really miss everybody, though. I will say it is sucky. So, you know.
Yeah. You brought out the boneware just for you and Jeffrey. Yeah.
Exactly. The boneware. No, I don't know what that means. Yeah, but it was an interesting holiday season. As you know, I watched some classic holiday films.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty fun. You know, I've got a list now for next year as well. People gave me so many suggestions that it's like, oh gosh, I'm good for like 3 years. I think that's going to be our new thing. Either Christmas Eve. It'll depend. It's always going to depend on when I have Scary Christmas. If we have to do it on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, then the opposite, I'll watch actual classic Christmas films and we'll have Yule School.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I joyfully anticipate the next Yule School.
Yes. A Diva's Christmas Carol. Wow.
Yes.
Something. Yeah, that was a good time. I will probably watch. That's probably going to be on next year, too. Because hopefully you'll be able to come over. I'm hoping some of these movies I want to like rewatch with people. Like, you know, me and a bunch of girlfriends were talking about doing a drinking game with Happiest Season while we hate watch it. So that'll be fun. And then you and I and other friends will watch A Diva's Christmas Carol and we'll all sing Heartquake and do the choreo.
I love the little sleigh ride at the end. Yeah. And you got to love a Marley Jacobs.
Yeah. It was super fun. It definitely took me back to that time. Like I remember when people dressed like the people in that, you know, it was very high school for me. I was like, oh my gosh, this is bringing up loads of memories. Yeah. Scrooged was awesome. That was probably my favorite. We should definitely think about doing that sometime on Fright School for next year. Mm-hmm. It's a nice comedy, you know, mix, you know, with horror elements. Matt from Horror Movie Night had mentioned, he compared it to a Tales from the Crypt episode. And so that really got me interested in it. So I really had fun with that. And I will definitely watch that again. I'm going to add that to Scary Christmas lineups. I think that would be fun.
Oh, yeah, that's a fun one. Yeah. I love Carol Kane. I mean,
oh, she's awesome.
Give me Carol Kane. Give me, like, I think Gabe was talking about it. It's like just a little Buster Poindexter out of nowhere. Like,
yeah, she was, yes, definitely one of my favorite elements of the movie. Speaking of her, I just rewatched When a Stranger Calls from the 70s that she's in.
Is she in that?
Yeah. Yeah, she plays the babysitter being harassed by the caller.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's funny to hear her because she's, you know, really young in it. And it's funny to hear before, like, her voice kind of got, became like what we know it as now, kind of that high pitch. It's like the Karen Walker thing, like Megan Mullally, like that, you know, kind of how she got to that high pitched place. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to hear her when she was still, like, looks like she's probably a teenager or, you know, in her early 20s. So that was kind of fun. It reminded me of that movie. And so that was on, I can't remember what streaming service, but it popped up. I was like, oh my gosh, I have to watch this right now. So I did. We should watch it for Fright School sometime, actually. Awesome. That's such a, you know, urban legend, you know, the babysitter and the obscene caller or murderous caller.
What were your thoughts on Happiest Season?
Are we going to have, let's start a new podcast where I just piss all over Christmas movies that everybody else loves. I don't want to do that. I got some perspective on it because I posted about it because I did. I started it and like right when she's in the car, it's like, by the way, my parents don't know that I'm gay.
By the way, I lied to you for like 6 months because I told you that I came out over the window.
I was like, okay, get out of this car and go back home, girl. Like right now, yeah. I'm going to turn this shit off. But
it also doesn't help that she looks a lot like the girlfriend in Get Out.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like gay Get Out.
Yes. Well, and that my friend Zakiya, you know, who's been on the show before, our friend of the show, Zakiya, posted that she's like, I kind of want this remade as like a Get Out type film because it, mm-hmm. it like is set up. It's like all the characters are there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we watched it. I had it as part of the day. I had like a whole gay hour. It was like a whole gay afternoon. It was like a Divas Christmas Carol, the Jinx and Ben de la Creme holiday special, mm-hmm. and then Happiest Season. So it was just like gay, 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 gay as shit. Gay as Christmas. And, so Jeffrey came in and watched it too. We just kept going, what? You know, so I had posted about it. And then, of course, like, especially a lot of my lesbian friends all jumped mm-hmm. on that post talking about how awful it was. But one friend brought up a really good point that she was like, yeah, it's bad, but have you watched anything else? And that is actually kind of true for my context. Like, no, I've not seen The Family Stone, which she also negatively compared it to. I have not seen a lot of the Christmas Hallmark movies, although I know they're all the same because all the posters are the same. That meme mm-hmm. that goes around with, 25 different movie posters that it's
like, a Christmas whatever.
Right, but it's like she's in a red sweater or a green sweater and he's in a red sweater or a green sweater and it's the whole thing. It's just, and it's like, and they're all, got lots of terrible things in them too and, gross heteronormative, nonsense about love and romance and lots of lying and twists and turns, it's just to get a ring on your finger, do what you gotta do. so that was brought up. Like, it's really, if you had seen all these other movies, you would just go, well, yeah, it's like any other terrible Christmas movie that just, for whatever reason, we get together and we watch them and we feel good about the holidays and ignore the toxic messaging. Like with our conversation about Rudolph that I've had actually several people reach out to me about to discuss.
How similarly they were traumatized by Rudolph.
I struck a chord with that. Yeah, our whole conversation and my thoughts on it definitely, yeah, there's quite a few people that were like, yeah, wow, that sucks. And people sending me quotes, my quotes from the episode.
So James and I watched Happiest Season on Christmas Day in the evening. And I'm watching it and I'm just kind of like, okay, there's definitely things here that are like not good. Like there's like very specific choices to make your main character be as shitty as possible. Right. And then it's like, okay. And then they give her this, the one way that she quote unquote kind of redeems herself or is justified in, how she reacted is because of, whatever internalized homophobia from high school and the whole thing with Aubrey Plaza's character.
Is her name Harper or no?
Harper. Yes.
That's the girlfriend who's in the closet. And then there's Kay Stu.
Yes, there's Kay Stu. There's San Junipero, right? Who is, I keep calling her like Yorkie from San Junipero because I think that's that same actress. Mackenzie Davis. And then you have like Aubrey Plaza and all of that. And then
it was my favorite. Then, like, I'm like, I'm the Aubrey Plaza character. That's who I'm most identified with.
Well, she's like, you know, like a doctor living her best life. And,
she wore,
you know,
a lot of black, drank a lot. A
lot of black.
You know, told a lot of like, it was. Yeah.
It told like it was whiskey. Then you had like Dan Levy, who is in the gay movie, is the gay best friend.
Yeah, who's tracking people on his iPhone, which I don't know. That kind of made me uncomfortable, that conversation about. But whatever, you know, again, in this giant trash heap of of terrible behaviors was kind of the smallest one.
And then, like, Victor Garber, I was like, Victor Garber's your dad? And he's, like, the biggest queen of the... You know? Yeah, yeah. It was also gay as shit. And I thought that, I forget, I think it was Allison Brie, you know, I get them all mixed up, like Brie her. Larson yeah, and yeah. Allison Pill. Allison Brie is the sister, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is really interesting. And so I thought it was like, again, like it was very, it kind of gave me Family Stone vibes, and like I see how this is a little problematic. And then at the very end, if you're looking through like the Instagram feed of the mom, and because it's going, you know, in reverse, you see that he... You know, all the, they would go to the pride parade and, you know, this, that, and the other. And
Paul was in the photo, which was cool.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was just, it was very, yeah, I mean, it was, I'm glad I watched it, you know, support Clea DuVall.
Well, I don't know now. Well, and that's kind of, that's really kind of the interesting thing about the whole conversation is like, you know, and reading the press around it, because, like, obviously, it was a big hit. Like, I think it's got, like, an 83% on Rotten Tomatoes or something like that, or whatever there it is. You know, lots of people really liked it and talked really positively about it. And, you know, it's very interesting in the straight media where it's like, well, Clea DuVall wrote it, and she's a lesbian, so, you know, it's not like the gays can blame the straights on this one. And I'm like, yeah, I can absolutely still blame the straights for creating the conditions that these characters have to, like, live in, and, you know, what movies get funding and what, you know, like, and sure, and like I said on my post, which I wrote about, you know, this is some people's story. Some queer people do experience this story. That's true and perfectly, you know, fine. It was just like, in the end, what was the real message? And I was just kind of disappointed in that. And again, in talking to a lot of my girlfriends, just who were kind of really put off by it, you know, but again, you know, I guess everybody is welcome to pull what they want from, you know, these kind of films. But yeah, I would just sort of like, I don't know, kind of.
There was some really, like, really horrific things, like when she finally gets caught, and then, like, she just, like, says, no, I'm not, that's a lie. And I'm like, oh, like, I felt that. I felt that so deeply. But again,
really,
you know,
difficult place. And I've known a lot of, like, my lesbian friends. I mean, and certainly, you know, plenty of our queer male friends as well, queer women, queer men, you know, who've been in relationships with people who are trying to maintain a straight thing around their families. And that is very hard and very awful. And I think it is a true story, you know, that can be, it's just, I don't know. I think, like we've talked about in the past, you know, the larger culture is super comfortable with our suffering, you know, and is going to give money to those sorts of projects because it fits a narrative. You know, I think, you know, it fits these larger narratives about the struggle of being queer, you know, the struggle of, you know, of our lives, and this idea that what we all want is what straight people want. And so I just think it sells this very heteronormative story. That's just not true for everybody. And I mean, again, it doesn't have to be. We have to be able to have both. You know, we should be able to make, you know, whatever kinds of films we want, tell whatever kinds of stories we want. But it's just, again, like anything else, it's like I wrote, every crumb in a famine is going to feel like a state dinner, you know. And I think this is one of those situations where, why can't we just have a big queer Christmas story where everybody's out and queer, and that's not the problem. You know, there can be other issues, there could be other conversations, there could be other struggles, you know, than tormented by our sexuality. It felt very dated. That was the other thing about the movie. I'm like, this really fits like 20, 25 years ago when queer as folk and the L word were, you know, scandalous, and, you know, and everybody was excited about two boys kissing on Dawson's Creek, you know, like that. It was such a big deal, you know.
Yeah, but you can't have the names, you can't have the names attached to it in the way that, you know what I mean? Like, it took 20 years to tell a basic story with those people.
But, and this is what's fascinating, though, about the conversation. So there, like, you know, we're talking about these kinds of forms of gatekeeping and storytelling, but then on the same platform with the Jinx and Dela, this is why I, you know, I'm still trying to collate all my thoughts around this and what's kind of happening, because the Jinx and Ben de la Creme special, I don't know if you watched it.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
That was on Hulu. Like, and I mean, they've got like Jesus Christ on there as some kind of grinder trick, you know, that I'm like, anybody with a Hulu account can access this. Like, I can't believe that they put that on there. You know, so it's kind of like mining both sides of like queer culture, like our debauchery and our extravagance and our outrageousness, and that we push the envelope with like drag queens and drag culture. And at the same time, having this other movie that really reinforces this heteronormative idea that like you have to fit into a particular version of love and of family to be accepted, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's just very, it's, we are living in a very interesting cultural time.
In a cultural moment. I mean, did I send James the A Gay and a Stranger clip? Yes, I did. Because I'm just like, this is like, this is what it means to be queer at Christmas. Like, yeah. You go and like, I remember 2016, like 2 weeks, 2 weeks after the election, I went to a drag queen Christmas with some of the Rue girls that were touring, and it was like, it made me feel so good. Like, yeah. It made me feel so safe, because there was all this talk about like, you know, we're gonna get through this. It was a very much a community thing,
right? Yeah,
that's, and I was just like, okay, yeah, this is why I love it.
Every year, and I usually see Jackie Beats live show. You know, she did Menstrual Krampus. Mm-hmm. She's done A Gay in a Manger, was her one of her shows. She's had a few others. You know, they're all puns like that. Yeah, so it is kind of fun to see that sort of reclamation of Christmas and of poking kind of fun at the ideas around it, and also what constitutes family, you know. But I don't think Happiest Season was meant kind of for that audience. I think that, you know, Clea was working something out, whatever it was, because she has said in interviews that it was autobiographical. So, hey, girl, write that story. You got a deal. You got it released on whatever it was released on. It's on Hulu. It's making money for her. So, hey, go her. Hopefully it will open up and broaden the ability for more stories like that to be told. But I don't know. I don't know if it exactly works that way either. So
yeah, I think the best kind of encapsulation of the film was my friend Jake, who is a comedian in Baltimore, and he said, I asked him what he thought, and he's like, this movie is simultaneously made for gay people, but it's also made for straight people.
Yeah.
Like, it does a good job.
More made for straight people.
Yeah, it rides that line. Like, yeah. It has all of the gay things, like our, as far as like representation crumbs,
right?
But like, you know, this is another thing about coming out, and I think I'm just, I don't know, hypersensitive more about like the things where it's like, we're still doing that, we're still like, you know, having the like overwrought coming out,
yeah.
Of
it's boring, you know. But again, I mean, I do also have to watch our like coastal elitism that we, you know, are lucky that we live in the city where we live, and, you know, mm-hmm. other friends of ours who live in, you know, just, I mean, it can be a very different world. I mean, you drive a couple hours outside of San Diego and you can very quickly be reminded that the world is not.
Yeah. You know. And some, you know, queer kid living in the middle of America, or even just a few hours outside of our own little city, yeah. Whose family has Hulu for whatever reason, is going to, you know, sneak and go watch it in the middle of the night somewhere, when, and then erase it from the watch history.
Right. And I'm going to also watched Ben and James.
Exactly. Well, that's how Ben and Dayla got picked up by Hulu because of their inclusion in their little, thing in Happiest Season. So,
which is awesome. And again, there you're proving, proving exactly that it is possible that it will, create space for more queer stories and more and things that are maybe more just diverse. Again, we're not a monolith. Like, Black people aren't a monolith. Like, Indigenous people are not a monolith. Like, everybody
fight for your multitudes.
And as I was reminded, neither are straight white males. They are not monolithic. So it's just a conversation I had regarding the Wonder Woman 84. So, but that everybody, there are lots of stories to tell. We have lots of stories, and I would just like to see more of those stories being told.
I did like Wonder Woman 1984.
Yeah, and that's great, and you're welcome to. I didn't even care. Like, my whole thing with Wonder Woman 84, at which I watched it, I'm not even at all really care about whether the film was good or not. It's more the response is fascinating. Like, and I posted about that. I posted about the Ghostbusters reboot, remake, whatever the hell you want to classify it as. Like, the internet was just, on fire for, 2 or 3 days. And I was just like, woo, this is intense. So I'm more fascinated by that, by the response, but everybody, I don't know. Again, this is why I'm glad we don't really review films. Like, I don't really care if a movie is good or bad. I'm curious about the cultural conversation around it. And Wonder Woman definitely brought out some very interesting conversations, especially in the idea of who was supposed to like it, and who wasn't, I guess everybody makes a movie for, they hope lots of audiences find it. I'm not particularly the audience for those kinds of movies, I've realized, so I generally stay out of it. But I was surprised. I had no intention of watching it because I didn't care for the first one. I fell asleep in it. And then I had a conversation about it, with our friends from Intermission Productions about how we found it very anti-feminist, or at least we found that it lacked, a cohesive feminist message. So I didn't plan on watching it, but then I watched all these people from across a massive spectrum talking about how bad it was. I'm like, okay, well, I guess I will have to watch this because I need to figure out what is happening here culturally. I still haven't figured it out. So I think it'll be another 10 years and we'll look back on this time and go, all I have to say is Gal Gadot is a Zionist, so fuck her. God, end all be all.
Gal Gadot.
Again, I just, I just don't want to be in a position of telling people they're wrong if they like something or if they don't, and I think that's kind of what I find the most offensive about any of these conversations. Is, and I saw it from friends, you just didn't get it. And that just smacks of condescension to me.
Yeah, I hate that. And I'm glad that I have you in that same mutual feeling of people will like what they like and let them have their joy. Let them have whatever it is that they like. I mean, it's not like it's not like they're, if they like something that is just blatantly homophobic, misogynist, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. No, it's one thing to be the KKK or whatever. I'm going to join that. No.
Exactly.
But, with movies.
None of our friends are saying oh my God, I love Birth of a Nation. Right.
Yeah. No, that's true. And it does make me want to be more mindful of that myself as well, because it's hard, because we do live in such a highly opinionated world as well. And social media begs that. So, of course, you want to be that film was garbage because it's just you find people that can agree and then you're all in this kind of whirlwind of talking about how much you hate.
Well, see, that's why we can always speak from the eye, make I statements. I did not care for it.
Right.
I can see how others would do.
Yeah. And that's how I kind of felt about Wonder Woman 84. I'm like, I'm sure there were things that people did enjoy and that's fine. And again, I'm not even coming down. I'm in the middle. I thought there were things that were fun. I liked seeing Kristen Wiig do something very, different.
Like, we made like Gilly from SNL a fucking action star. That's amazing to me.
It was super fun. So, you know, in that realm, there was just a lot of other things going on that it just left me going, what? A lot, you know. But again, I'm also that terrible brain that goes into those movies like the Avengers or, you know, whatnot, going, wait, what? Who's going to pay for this damage?
Oh, see, and you know me, I'm all about a superhero romp. Right. I think what I enjoyed most about Wonder Woman 1984 was the fact that I watched like both Wonder Woman films with my parents the whole day of Christmas Day. Oh, and that was nice.
That's sweet.
You know, yeah, that was nice to just like, I said, hey, I really want to watch this movie. It just came out. You know, normally we would have to go to a theater, but like we have it in our home. So
yeah,
let's just do it. And that was nice to see them, you know, to us to escape.
Yeah, that's nice. That's Joe bragging that he has parents. Jeez. dark humor to start the year off. No, that's wonderful. I do mean that. That is lovely. I'm glad that you had that. It was nice. Like I said, Jeffrey and I did the same. We hung out and watched it, you know, and it was lovely, you know, to do something together. Mm-hmm. I got one of those too. You can't see
your
listener, but
amazing.
Joe has one of those head scratcher things that has all the I got those for stocking stuffers this year and back scratchers.
Oh my God. The Orgasmatron.
Yeah, it's quite lovely. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, whatever. Again, love what you love, people. You know, don't listen to people on the internet. Don't let me ruin your movies that you love and adore, like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or Happiest Season. If you got something out of it, hey, good for you. That is wonderful. Just be sure in the knowledge that I am a miserable person.
So what's interesting is, and since we are talking about this, I wasn't going to bring it up, but we are talking about it. This involves a book, which I am reading currently. Ooh. I know, reading a book. I got this for Christmas. It is called, it's by Lindy West, and it's her new book of essays called Shit, Actually.
Oh, nice.
And what this is that Lindy West, who we know from Shrill and her other book, which I forget at the top of my head right now, but she was once she also like wrote movie reviews, and she wrote movie reviews of like movies that were classic movies that everybody loves. And so she, you know, approached it from a different lens and kind of applying a more kind of modern feminist lens on it. And so in this book is her essays on several different movies. The most infamous one is Shit, Actually, which is about Love Actually. Which I like Love Actually. I watch it every year, and have for the last 8 or so years, around Christmas time. And I actually showed James, Love Actually this year too, for the first time. But she goes in on a lot of movies. She goes in on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Forrest Gump, Back to the Future, Top Gun, Twilight, Harry Potter, Jurassic Park. Like, she goes in on a lot of stuff. So I'm making my way through her different essays right now. And so far, my favorite one is the one on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
I'll have to borrow that from you when you're done.
And you should. You should. I will. I'll have to send it over because it is, it's really, really cool how she's able to, like the essays range everywhere from like a BuzzFeed listicle of like the 40 things I thought when I watched X movie, to like an actual discussion about like the, you know, the trials and tribulations of the nuclear family. So,
wow. Yeah. I would love to read that.
Very cool.
That's really good. Huh. Very cool. Yeah. Speaking of seeing each other, have you been able to get a vaccine yet? Are you in line? Are you signed up?
I'm in line. I guess, you know, we're in line as if, you know, we're all in line. So I'm hoping that, not to get into too much detail, but I'm hoping maybe within the next couple months, but we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll definitely see about it.
Yeah. I got mine about a week ago. So, and I'm still here. I'm still fine. I haven't eaten anybody. You know,
good.
Nothing. My arm didn't grow another arm. So, dear listener, if you're listening to this and you're afraid, don't be afraid, because you know, just know that your friend Joshua is not a zombie yet.
Yes. Don't worry, Joshua. I'll be the one to do it.
All right. Sounds good.
I'll be like Andrea, you know, killing her sister.
I dig it. A little Walking Dead throwback. Yeah. All righty. Well, with that, we'll take a short break and we'll be back to discuss the new Blumhouse feature, Freaky.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey.
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and, the practical effects. And also the male gaze.
My gaze at the males.
Hi-yo! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
All right, welcome back. Today's episode, we are talking about Freaky, the latest. I don't know why I keep saying it like that, but it's just fun.
Freaky.
It sounds very gay, which is appropriate. This is a very gay film. No. But anyway, so it is the new release from Blumhouse. We thought we would bring in the new year with a new movie, which this one came out Friday, November the 13th, 2020, so just a few months ago. Written and directed by Christopher Landon, from a screenplay by himself and Michael Kennedy, both queer men. Mm-hmm. Christopher Landon being the son of the late Michael Landon from Little House on the Prairie.
And from Highway to Heaven.
Highway to Heaven. There we go. We've got Vince Vaughn, Catherine Newton, Katie Finneran, Celeste O'Connor, Alan Ruck. It is, best described as a little twist on Freaky Friday with a horror plot. So what did you think, Joe? Let's start there.
It was a lot of fun. I loved it. I liked it a lot because it was exactly what I thought it was going to be. And it was also just like, it had the suspense elements were really great. I loved it also because like as someone who's going for my, you know, postdoc in fright school, I was able to pick up on things a little bit. Like it's definitely made as a love letter to the slasher. And
yeah.
And I love that about it.
I was thinking about that when I was watching it. I was like, oh man, I'm glad that Joe has seen so many of the movies that are kind of informing this, you know, because mm-hmm. this was definitely one kind of like Scream where you really like, I mean, certainly you can go in and watch it as somebody who's never seen a horror film and enjoy it for what it is, I'm sure. But again, it's really adds to it because there were several homages to horror films, which we'll get into. But go ahead.
I was also like, I was experiencing a lot of joy, but then I was also experiencing just like the slightest pang of sorrow, because this would have been fun as a field trip with our friends to go to sit in a theater, or at the very least at your house with, you know.
I wish I would have went to the drive-in.
Yeah, this would have been fun at a drive-in too.
Yeah, I don't know why we never went when it was playing, but it just for whatever reason it just got away from us. But yeah, it would have been. You're right. It would have been really, really fun in a group setting.
Yeah. But overall, like it was fun. I definitely would watch this again.
Yeah.
I kept going. I was like, see, you're funny because like you were thinking Freaky Friday. Like, you know, the Freaky Friday movies. I was thinking The Hot Chick.
Oh, okay.
With Rachel McAdams and Rob Schneider. And I was like, oh my God, it's like, what if The Hot Chick, if it was like The Hot Chick, but a serial killer?
Yeah, I think that's fair too. You know, certainly, I've not seen that movie, The Hot Chick, but I know the basic premise of it. So I think that's a fair assessment. I just, obviously the title being Freaky and then it gets released on Friday the 13th. No, just, yeah,
for sure.
It's using obviously that,
And we need to get we need to get Vince Vaughn as, like, you know, the shape in the new Halloween movie.
Yeah,
really well.
Yeah, it was really funny because I was watching it and my knowledge of Vince Vaughn, I'm like actually looking at his filmography, is pretty narrow. Like when I think of him, I think of him in the remake of Psycho, and I think of him in The Cell. And then I'm kind of looking. I've not seen any of this. None of this. Nothing else. Nope. I'm just like, I don't know what any of this stuff is. And then Freaky. So it's interesting because in reading interviews or reading reviews of the film, it's talking about like him doing this kind of horror turn, you know, but also comedic. And I'm like, gosh, you know, I only really think of him as Norman Bates. And then, of course, in The Cell, he's the FBI agent or whatever. He's like the partner of Jennifer Lopez's character. So I'm sort of ignorant of his comedic work. So it's interesting to watch this without like that knowledge and kind of seeing him doing both was really fun for me, you know, especially him playing, you know, this like big hulking serial killer who's inside this like, or who is a 16-year-old girl, you know, swapping places with a 16, 17-year-old girl, however old they're supposed to be, I'm unsure. But yeah, it was quite a thing to watch. Jennifer and I were just like laughing a lot at it. It was pretty good. I mean, I thought that it wasn't overly, you know, I thought both of them did a good job of being, you know, each other. So, and I read some interviews, again, that they were talking about, or the director was talking about, you know, they kind of put them together and, you know, wanted them to get to know each other and that they worked on that, you know, worked out how to kind of be, you know, the physicality of that, you know, how do you take your kind of hulking form? And, you know, he sort of minces a little bit in the way he moves his hands, or, you know, he's like running into things and he keeps forgetting how tall he is. And, you know, she keeps forgetting how tall she is. It's so fun. Gender pronouns are fun.
Pronouns.
You know, but it was just, I don't know. It was entertaining to watch in that realm. But so, dear listener, if you've not seen it, the movie is about a serial killer who, it's very, you know, very tropey. You know, he's got a mask. He's hunting teenagers at homecoming. You know, kills a bunch of them at this ritzy house. One of the characters' dad collects art or something from around the world, gets a hold of like a magic dagger knife, and the next person he stabs is this teenage girl. Well, it happens to be Friday the 13th. It happens to be the moon is full, and they swap bodies. And, you know, as usual, hilarity, hilarious escapades ensue. As she tries to get back into her body while being hunted by the police, and, he, in her body, goes around murdering all of her friends and a really horrible teacher, that Alan Ruck guy.
Well, what I loved was that, like, he basically goes around and kills a bunch of her enemies.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I'm like, okay, well, there's a little bit of revenge fantasy there. Oh,
yeah, totally. Yeah, there is. It's very interesting to me because, yeah, this movie, it got lots of homages. Halloween, you know, was one, especially, early on when he kills the so there are four teenagers that get murdered right off the bat, which there were some creative kills in there. That wine bottle.
The wine bottle thing. Yeah. I was like, damn, that's the first one.
Yeah. And like shoving in his throat and then cracking the glass. I was like, that was pretty cool. Like that was fun. You know,
like that's how you know that like horror people wrote this.
Like, yeah, they are having a blast. I looked up those bottles of wine. They are insane. Like tens of thousands of dollars.
I was like, oh my, and when he said like, I was like, that's a Montrachet. And I'm like,
and right, what like, do you call it? Mount Ratchet.
Mount Ratchet. And I'm like, oh God. And he broke. I'm like, oh my God, like his life is over.
And then it didn't matter. But yeah, but so kills those couple, and then the last girl, he like slams her against the wall on like a spike, and then the way he turns his head and looks at her, you know, I was like, oh, that's nice, a little nod to Halloween. Obviously, you know, there's I felt very like Carrie vibes with Millie, and you know, being made fun of, and then of course
her dress, the wild hair, like in front of her face. Yeah, very.
It just felt, it read very Carrie in that sense. And then, of course, her writing like this love poem to him, which I know in Carrie, it's the reverse, that she likes the poem that Tommy writes. But I just thought it was interesting that a poem played a part in that, which also just kind of echoed Carrie. You know, Scream, The Shining, there's a whole scene, you know, where she slams the knife through, or he slams the knife using her body. This is going to be fun to try to keep all the pronouns straight here, keep everything, you know. But anyways, you know, the knife, it's very much a here's Johnny kind of thing. So that The Shining, but then also movies like Heathers and Jawbreaker, you know, it kind of reminds me of those sorts of, you know, also very queer loved high school films, you know, so there was some of that as well in it that, you know, yeah, I thought it was fun. It's also, you know, this is very meta, like Scream, you know, the characters realize that they're in a horror film, you know, when they're running and he's like, I'm gay, you're black, we're going to die. It was like, I'm like, yes, that's, you know, very tropey. But that's the one thing about the movie that I think is kind of a failing, is that nobody quote unquote important dies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like her enemies, you know, yeah, of course, they're like teenage boy 1, 2, 3, 4, you know what I mean, they might as well not have names, you know, or kind of knocked off, because they're only important to be gory and to kind of, you know, play against. But you know, none of her friends, none of the, you know, none of the really important quote-unquote characters that you want to live, all of them live. So I think that was a little bit of a spoiler alert, but you know, as usual, hopefully you've seen the movie before listening. You know, I think that's probably one of the downfalls. And I mean, I'm not saying I don't know who I would have killed off. Although the little gay boy, he's kind of rapey. So that comment in the early part, do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah, which I liked, which I shouldn't call him that. I should call him by the character's name. What was his name? Josh. It's my name, duh. Josh Detmer, and then Nyla Jones, that's played by Celeste O'Connor as Nyla and Misha Osherovich as Josh Detmer. So those are her friends, and they're the eponymous queer and black characters who you do expect to die, because that's usually what happens, but they don't. That's great.
We did get a kid killed. He was in the closet, but you know,
that's true. Yes, kill our gays. But that was that whole conversation in the beginning of the movie. So which I thought was like a red herring, you know, or not a red herring, but a foreshadowing. You because he made that comment about getting them drunk and sleeping with them or whatever. And then Nyla is like, that's super rapey. I'm like, yeah, that is super rapey, Josh. Like, you suck. No. And then, of course, later on, the drunk jock, you know, kisses him. And then it's the whole loser faggot thing. And mm-hmm. all of that, super, you know, very cliche. So what were some other oh my gosh, the super awkward kissing with Vince Vaughn
and Shelton. Yes, this is what like watching in a movie theater would be like. Amazing, like people just cracking up at, like, you know, him seriously trying to put moves on Vince Vaughn, and he's like, can I come to the back?
Yeah.
I was like, oh,
I know where this is going. This is gonna be super
thirsty.
Yes, it was very what do you call that,
cringy. It was very cringy.
Yeah, hashtag cringe. You know, but I got what they were trying to do. And again, it's like, it was cute in the sense of like, again, it's sort of a conversation about gender, about who people are, you know, I think is what they were trying to do. Like, you're still Millie to me, which I thought was sweet, but you know, still, I was just kind of like, this is very awkward watching Vince Vaughn and try to kiss this boy.
Well, I love that. Like she called, I love that she called it out. She was just like, you know, you do know that this body is like, you know, a killer with yellow teeth.
Yeah, she's like, I'd rather wait till my hand isn't bigger than your face.
Yeah.
So,
and they like,
it was just cute, the whole thing.
I also just love that they went for it. They were just kind of like, okay, like just go for it and do it.
Yeah. No, totally. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously everybody in this movie was game for anything because it's really that kind of script. You know, lots of things happening. Lots of fun deaths. Again, like we said, we were talking about the bottle, the wine bottle being crushed.
Oh my God. Might be my second favorite horror kill ever. Yeah,
it was, that was pretty entertaining. And then I don't know how realistic it is, obviously. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of suspension of disbelief, but like the cryogenic freezer thing, I'm like, first of all, like, are those a thing that high schools have? For athletes,
I mean, their high school looked like it would be in a socioeconomic area that would have that.
Right. Yeah, possibly. But yeah, her, that death was pretty funny. And again, reminding me of like Jason X with like the liquid nitrogen where they freeze the girl's face and he crushes it, you know, which I still am super entertained by. Like, I remember seeing that in the theater and laughing hysterically because it was just gross and fun and weird, you know, like a human slushy. And so, you know, she like falls out of the thing and breaks into all the pieces. I thought that was fun.
I was like, you can tell gay men wrote this because the phrase clam jam is in there.
Oh, clam jam. Yes. Vegetarian. I like how she texts that. Yeah.
So did you pick up on Booker's last name? Booker's last name is Strode. I noticed it when they're at the game when she's the mascot, and then they throw, someone throws, one of the football players throws something at her, and she looks back and you can see Booker is there and his last name. I'm like, oh, who? I was like, I saw Strode. I'm like, oh my God, which one of them is the Strode? And it's him, it's Booker. And I'm like, ah,
yeah.
And so immediately I was like, okay, so you're not dying. Because the Strodes live.
Yes, 100%. I did not catch that, so I think that's, I see it now on the cast list. Because they never really use it in the movie.
You know? No, I think it's just for us. I think it's that's again great. Just one of the things that's for us.
No, that is great. That is really fun. And another, you know, this is full of those, full of little homages and little touches here and there of. You know, love of horror and, you know, of the genre. You know, this isn't a movie that's trying to break any really truly new ground, you know? I mean, it uses a concept that, you know, body swapping that we're very familiar with, that's in lots of science fiction and, you know, and like family films when you think of like, you know, body swap or like body change, like Big, you know, or Freaky Friday, you know, it's a whole genre unto itself. That's being used here, but it's, again, it's, you know, just a little twist on it and then having a lot of fun with horror tropes and the kills. You know, I loved when she killed, I didn't like, what the hell was wrong with her shop teacher? He was such a dickhead.
I have a theory. I had a theory when I was watching this. I'm like, okay, they were talking in the first scene where it's, you know, the kids around the campfire talking about the Blissfield Butcher.
Yeah.
And how, like, you know, it was this in the 70s and all this stuff. And then he stopped and then he came back. Part of me was just like, oh, what if the shop teacher was the first Blissfield Butcher? And he just, like, retired and, like, this is him trying to come and get him. You know what I mean? Like, I think maybe that was probably too much and too complicated.
Yeah.
But I was just like, oh, he's just an asshole.
Right, but it just, yeah, exactly. It just, like, I don't see how you could get away with that, like, you know, the way he was acting. Because it's like, you know, her dad had just died, like, you know, a year ago.
Well, yeah, her dad just died, and then she came to school the next day after being, like, attacked by the supposed serial killer.
Yeah.
And he's, like, all up in her grill, and I'm like, I'm like, dude.
Total dickhead. I loved seeing him get it. Yeah, that was a lovely little death scene getting sawed in half. You know, that was something else I wanted to comment on was like, you know, you could almost put like a checklist together, you know, like dead dad, so grief, you know, mom is drinking secretly, so very Nightmare on Elm Street. You know, you have like the bullying, you have, you know, I mean, there was just lots of
the elements. Sisters, Dewey, you know, the sister is David Arquette, but more capable.
Yes, yes, yeah. Obviously.
She's like, well, simultaneously David Arquette and like David Arquette and the dad from Black Christmas.
Right. There we go. Yes. Yeah, she was. Yeah, you're right. That's a good. Tie there. But, anyways, just kind of felt like, yeah, there are lots of tropes being played with and lots of homages being made. I'm curious. You know, I was trying to look and see if there was a, like, this kind of film, so like a body swap film, like, mm-hmm. what is, you know, like, what is kind of the point of it? You know, so usually I found this list, 10 cliches of the body swap movie. And so, and it's talking about, like, you know, movies like The Hot Chick is brought up, 17 Again, and Big, which again are maybe aren't necessarily body swap, but having that. Waking up in a body that's not the one you went to bed with. Like Father, Like Son. There's a book from the 1800s called Vice Versa, 1882, that was turned into a film in 88 with Fred Savage and Judge Reinhold. Obviously, we mentioned Freaky Friday. And so, you know, so I just thought this was kind of a you know, a good list that some of this, you know, obviously fits this movie. You know, there's always, this is a ridiculous method of transference.
Is When You Wish Upon a Star on it in that list?
I don't know what
from that is. Disney Channel.
It's not listed here, but
it has Katherine Heigl and her name from Halloween?
Oh yeah, Danielle Harris.
Daniel Harris and Katherine Heigl.
Mm-hmm. I see that from 96. It is, when I looked up body swap movies just in general, so Freaky like comes up, The Skeleton Key with Kate Hudson, and then there's others, Switch. You know, I also think of like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. That's sort of an, you know, not exactly, but again, playing with those sorts of ideas of of being two different people. But anyway, so we start with the method of transference. So in this movie, it's this, you know, again, like Aztec dagger, you know, so you have this, which, you know, we see that in horror a lot, you know, ancient objects that are, you know, possessed of some sort of power. I like this says, like, as long as it can be described in trailers and posters as mysterious, you know, so we have that in the knife, which that whole, it's like, man, there is a lot of stuff written on that knife that the teacher is reading out.
That whole scene was hilarious. I was like, okay, I get it. Like, we're making fun of it. It is still kind of like, you know, approaching cultural appropriation, approaching like tokenism of, you know, ancient indigenous culture.
Right. Yeah. You always have to find that person that's going to explain it, you know, mm-hmm. you know,
holy. What I love about this movie is that, like, you know, no one went to a book like, I just looked it up online. Just found it up online. Yeah, I'm like, no, this is how we keep this going. It's all there.
Except what's actually written on it, which you would think would be translated by somebody somewhere. But no, it's too much. We can't be bogged down in details. Comic attention paid to change in private parts. Obviously, there's that whole scene in the bathroom where she's playing with her newly acquired penis.
She's like flopping it around.
Which, you know, that's always something I wonder about in those kinds of movies, you know, because it like, I think that's kind of the most, like, it's a disturbing part that usually in movies we just ignore, you know, the bigger conversation, you know, like, it's one thing to wake up and, oh, I'm in my mom's body. Ah, I'm old, you know, like Friday, or, you know, you wake up in a man's body, or you wake up in a woman's body. And the first thing they do is like grab their breasts or, you know, or something like that. Like, you know, just to be like, whoa, you know, like, I'm in another body, you know, but like, really, I don't know. It's just kind of like an odd thing. Like when you think about like Freaky Friday, like you've woken up in your mom's body, your mom's in your body, like, you're going to at some point in the movie have to like undress and shower and do things. You know, I'm just thinking too much, but you know, it's like those sorts of questions. So I just like how they handled in this movie that she's just like having fun. She's peeing all over the wall. She doesn't know how to use it really.
Yeah. She's like, wow, peeing standing up is great.
Yeah. So I thought that was, I thought it was entertaining in a way to kind of like play with that, those concepts, because it is a very disturbing thing, especially like if you swap bodies with somebody like a family member or somebody close to you, like suddenly you now know what their whole body's like. And that's kind of a weird thing that we kind of have to not talk about in those movies so that they yeah. work. But I, you know, so I thought it was kind of, you know, silly in this movie.
I'm kind of glad they didn't go here, but like I was almost... I kind of, one of my like, okay, predictions for the film going into it was like, are we going to get like a Buffalo Bill type moment? You know what I mean? Where she's, he's like actually really feeling himself in the body, you know, is he's just really like, ooh, yeah, I can get used to this. And I like that they didn't go that way, because it was more about how he was getting away with everything. Like,
right. Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting that he had like a sense of style. Obviously everybody was kind of yeah. wowed by the way she looked. That kind of plays with that sort of idea, but you're right. Really, it was, you know, his interest in keeping her body was more of the undetected, mm-hmm. you know, ness of it, of being able to continue to be a psychopathic killer while maintaining, you know, yeah. not being able to completely be undetected in that
sense. Yeah, and it was also the perfect trap. Like, you know, the perfect Absolutely. Trap if you're yeah. trying to get teenagers is to be like, you know, a young, hot, cis white female.
Yeah, no, totally. yeah, if that's your thing, you know, that's if Jason could just get into the body of this girl, you know, then things would be way easier, you know, for him over there at old Camp Crystal Lake. So another thing on the list, which we kind of talked a little bit about, slightly veiled pedophilic moments. So I think what this is trying to say is like, usually in those like body swap movies, especially when it's like a kid, like in Big, you know, you're watching Big. And even though, like, I mean, again, I have not seen Big in the sense that I have a conscious memory of it. Mm-hmm. I know I've seen it when I was a kid, but I have not watched it in the time, but I know what the premise is, 'cause I'm not, you know, I'm in this culture. So I know that he, like, as a kid, makes a wish, and then he mm-hmm. wakes up and he's, you know, Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
But anyways, but he's still a kid, and you watch the movie knowing that he is a child in this man's body, and then he goes and has these sort of romantic moments.
Oh, he has, like, full-on sex with a woman.
Right, which is super problematic, like, when you step back and think about, like, that he's a child. But that's a thing in these movies, you know, or I think Freaky Friday has a really uncomfortable moment with, like, Jamie Lee Curtis, the remake, obviously. I'm not sure. I haven't seen the Jodie Foster version of that movie in many years. But I think there's a moment in Freaky Friday where, like, Jamie Lee Curtis's character is it the dad or something, but they have like an awkward moment where she's like, I'm actually the daughter, or I'm actually, like, you know, it so it's mm-hmm. kind of, it's weird. And then also something I think awkward kind of happens with a teenager, because she's actually
Lindsay a Lohan, mom,
you know. Yeah. So it's like, you know, so it's those kinds of things. And obviously that happens with this movie. Now, again, I'm not exactly sure how old these kids are supposed to be, if they're supposed to be like 18-year-old seniors, because I was 18 in high school.
The Misha, who plays Josh, they say that they're 18.
Okay. Well, yeah. Maybe it's not as weird, but it is still kind of weird. Vince Vaughn is 50, and so seeing him try to kiss on, you know, what appears to be a 17 to 18 year old boy, it just, yeah. again, it provides that, but we find it funny, you know, like the point yeah. is, like, in those movies, you find it comical, or whatever reason, I guess, if you like Big, if he actually has a real romantic relationship with this person, I don't know what we're
meant to well, there's also that. there's also the idea of consent, though, right? Like right. The whole, I mean, I'm not going to get into a discussion of, like, you know, the, kind of like the abnormal psychology behind pedophilia, but I mean, it's the idea that they know that the, like, you know, that they know that the other person the object of their desire is not of legal age, right? So like in Big, it's like problematic two ways, because it's like this kid is, yes, he is a man he is the consciousness of a of a child in a man's, you know, form, but at the same time, like, you know, the woman doesn't know the truth either, you know?
Well,
what I mean,
of like, course. Yeah. But still, I'm just saying, like, it's an odd phenomenon, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
We do, and we can laugh at it or enjoy it, but then we're not really able to have a larger conversation about consent and about, you know, the nature of that in culture. Mm-hmm. So I think it's I thought that was a good point, because again, I'm comparing this to other like body swap type movies, which we haven't mm-hmm. done. Again, there aren't a ton in horror that are like this. So this, I think, is you know, novel in that way of using that premise in a horror film. And I remember when I first saw the trailer, I was like, oh, this should be fun. You know, the idea of it felt new, even though this is a very old form of storytelling. So that was kind of the main ones that on this list. Again, this is from IndieWire, of 10 cliches of the body swap movie. Some of them, some of the other ones are like, you know, kid as an adult acts too immature, adult as kid acts too behind the times, spending montage. We don't have that in here. Mm-hmm. The adult becomes cooler. A big event dependent on a unique talent. We don't have that here either. But you know, the idea that, oh, I'm in the wrong body and I can't star in the play, or I can't, you mm-hmm. know, take the team to win, you know, or whatever. I've got to figure it out.
I got to do the big presentation, right? And I know nothing about math or something like that.
The in the no friend, that's obviously is here, you know, which is cute. That whole scene was really fun, where they're like beating him up and he's trying to convince them, or she is trying to convince them, that she's actually herself in his body. So you always have those moments in these kind of movies where they say the thing, you know, that they go, wait, yeah, nobody knows about that. How could you? And they do the handshake, the whole thing. You know, so obviously that.
Okay, so you don't have to tell me the answers, but do you know what the three questions are? Like that, like, let's say if you and I swapped bodies and you needed to, like, you as me in my body needed to tell Jeffrey what happened, like, do you know, like, the three things that you could tell him that he would immediately know it was you in my body?
I mean, I've never thought about it, but I could think of some things, I think, in the moment that Jeffrey okay. would definitely go, oh my god, that is you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly.
Okay.
Yeah. There are certainly, you know, private enough things, you know. Yeah.
I mean, I haven't thought about this for a long time or anything. Like, I'm
you know, you have. You've been sitting, you've got it written down somewhere.
It's just like, in case of emergency, please break this little card and it will right. tell you.
You carry it around in like a special case that's sealed until needed. No, that wouldn't do you any good, because that would be on the other, that'd be on your actual body.
Exactly. So, it's like, in case of emergency, in case of body swap, please break this. Right.
Go to Joe's house, crawl under his bed, go to the fifth slat in. My point in bringing that up was I just kind of want to compare this to other body swap movies, because it does fit, obviously, a lot of those tropes. Like you said, it's not truly breaking new ground, but in the sense of horror, it's not something I've ever really seen done, you know? So I thought that made it, again, a fun movie.
And it also plays, again, like, so, you know, we're talking about how Millie's personality is very, like, you know, she's very reserved. She's trying not to be ostentatious. She's very, you know, she gets bullied. She, you know, she is not seen. And, you know, it's interesting to kind of see that be used to the benefit of the butcher's character in her body, where it's like, oh yeah, I can just walk around and not be noticed and actually be, you know, silently attract people. Like, I'm a walking honey trap. And then you see how she's trying to play that out in his body, where she's like stumbling across and she's like this like huge, you know, over 6 feet tall, 50-year-old killer, you know, who she can't hide anymore. That's the other thing, too, is also she's trying to all of a sudden thrust into a body that not only is physically difficult to hide, but like also her face is plastered everywhere as the butcher.
Yeah. Yeah. It added a sense of urgency to the movie. Again, I think the runtime really helped. It was not overly long. It moved really fast. It was fun. I watched it again. I watched it last night and then I watched it again this morning just to, clarify. And I was like, wow, I really like the pacing of this. It's really fun. I don't really have a lot of negative things to say about it. I mean, certainly we could get into Vince Vaughn's political life and be, but I don't think that really comes into play in like analyzing the movie. I'm curious to see this again in a year or two, what I might think about it again. Seeing it in the future.
I also love how they like, blatantly kind of set it up to possibly be a sequel, but then the last like 5 minutes, it has that satisfying ending.
Yeah. Well, again, it gave me Halloween, the new Halloween, you get these three women together to kind of take this guy down.
Yes.
That was a very, nice ending. Mm-hmm. And again, it still leaves it up for a sequel because you have the knife. So if they wanted to do a franchise of this and they wanted to play with that knife again and doing body swap and kind of a horror thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She totally sets it up, too. She's like, I hope no one ever sees that knife again or something like that. And, it'd be interesting to kind of see how that plays into it. And honestly, like with Chris Landon at the helm, I would love to see a sequel to this.
Yeah, definitely. I enjoyed Happy Death Day, and I enjoyed the Happy Death Day 2. Happy whatever it was called. Happy Death Day to you. Mm-hmm. Some, the use of two. I thought that was really fun. It really made me want to watch that again, the original, the first Happy Death Day. And I also really have an urge, and I probably actually will later today watch Jennifer's Body.
It made me want to
watch that as well. For the kind of the same fun catty mayhem that ensues in that film is kind of similar here.
Can we talk a little bit about when Josh's mom comes home?
Gosh, that whole sequence was so strange. Did you notice the picture?
Yes,
the two of them.
Where they're like doing their like buddy comedy,
like Liza and Judy Garland or something. It's just like,
well, I think that's the point, right? It's like, sure. And then the whole thing, it's like, we're role playing. And it's like, isn't role playing a sex thing? And then he's all like, mom, I'm straight. And I'm like,
she's like, you are a lot of things, but straight is not that. Which is just really,
which is, a nice little twist on the form. And, they gave depth. They gave depth and character and depth and color to the queer character. Would have loved to know more about Nyla.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. And especially why she, because I'd be like, fuck you, girl. I've seen this movie. I'm getting out of here.
We had a white police officer pull a gun on a black girl.
I actually was very, that was kind of shocking to me. And, because it's like, she is like a child girl, like, calm down. Like, what is wrong with you? That was a bit of a bad choice. I think that's a very good point. Overall, I thought the movie was fun, but yes, of course it is, beleaguered by some of the tropes in horror that are not great. And certainly, that was not a great image having her, she's like forceful with the gun, the police, the sister. It's like, you should know this girl. She's the best friend of your sister, so it's like, it kind of should be inferred that like, there's no reason to draw a gun on her like that, that was very threatening. So yes, that, I agree.
Yeah, when that happened, I was like, oh, I was like, oh, God, no. No.
That was kind of, yeah, the image of that was very fucked up, you know. So, but I mean, that plays into kind of what you were saying earlier, where her status as a cop is kind of like, well, what's happening here?
Yeah.
You know.
But again, like, you know, it's all about, I think, like, it's interesting being this student of Wright School and watching and watching horror films now, because now I'm always about, like, what's the real trauma? Like, what's the real trauma that is informed you that's going to propel, help you overcome the heightened trauma of this stuff? Or what's the secret, right? So, like, when we watch The Rental, I'm like, the secret is that they had sex. And so how is that going to spiral now?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah. Overall, I thought this was, you know, fun. You know, again, grief is playing a role here. You know, trauma. You know, and then, yeah, like, high school is a horror film, you know, for some people. And that mm-hmm. that is never going to go away. You know, that is such a powerful trope, because it is such a true reality for many people, you know, that high school remains, no matter how woke, quote unquote, we get, how aware we get. You know, I think that there's always just going to be things that are very terrifying about being yeah. thrown into that situation. So this plays with a lot of those ideas, and again, is a love letter, you know, in cutout letters from magazines, you know, to horror films and to the genre that generally, you know, does has lots of, you know, bad shit in it that, you know, about queer people, about people of color, about women. And so we do see a lot of that twisted here and used in, I thought, in fun ways. So
yeah,
I recommend it, at least for a watch. Again, it's not perfect, but you know what is. mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm glad that we did that, and I'm glad that we're back with another year of Fright School. Got some fun, hopefully get to do some fun things this year, if we all get vaccinated, or we all, you know, don't die of the new strain, if it doesn't become the Stand. hopefully we'll get to get out on the road and travel and see people at cons again, but we'll see.
Hopefully it's not The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
Right. Yeah, it's just going to be you and I. Yeah, exactly. Walking to Los Angeles with our business cards and buttons.
Yes. But like post-apocalyptic. Totally. I imagine you like, you know, Furiosa. Oh,
I love that. I'll take that. That'd be great. I'll shave my head for that. That'll be fun.
That's how you know that society has collapsed, because you no longer have hair.
Oh, that's good. Do I have to lose my arm, though? Do I need to have, like, the robot arm or whatever it is she has?
You can. I mean, it's up to you.
We'll see. We'll see when we get there. point is, here's to another year of filling your heads with our voices, and Joe's nightmares with more fodder to generate them. And we will see you next time, right?
Yes.
Sleep well, good night.
Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.